Now coming up on Monitor, Meet the Press, the prize-winning interview program produced by Lawrence Spivak. Ready for the unrehearsed conference are Marquis Childs of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Peter Lissagore of the Chicago Daily News, Ellie Abel, Detroit News, and Esther Van Wagener-Tufte, NBC News. They will talk with G. Menon Williams, Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, who has just returned from a month's tour of 16 African nations. Here is the moderator of Meet the Press, Ned Brooks.
One of the most difficult problems facing the new administration is the improvement of our relations with the independent countries of Africa. Civil strife in the Congo is one example of communist efforts to infiltrate the new governments. Our guest today, Assistant Secretary of State G. Menon Williams, has just completed a 24,000-mile tour of the African continent. His visit has been followed with keen interest in world capitals. He has been both praised and criticized by African leaders. Mr. Williams was appointed to the State Department position after serving six terms as the governor of Michigan. Now we're ready to start the questions. Mrs. Tufte.
Mr. Secretary, you've been back about a week now and had time to review some of your findings. I wonder if you can give us some idea of your recommendations to the president.
Well, I can't go into it in any detail, as you well can understand. But one thing I did indicate, and that was that I thought that each of these progressive, responsible governments was having a race with the desires of the people for a better life, and if they weren't able to deliver, they would be in difficulty, and perhaps less responsible governments would be in power. And as a consequence, we have the problem of meaningful aid for all of these governments and making our aid as efficient as possible.
Did any of the African leaders suggest that the United Nations play a stronger role in the Congo?
Well, I think that most of the nations supported the United Nations in the Congo. There were some of them who were just a little apprehensive because nothing had been done, they thought, for so long a period, and they were anxious to see some action there.
You spoke Friday, in some detail about regional groups getting together, and you seem to see some real hope in this. Do you feel that in the future, maybe in the great future, you could envision something like a United States of Africa or two or three United States of Africa?
Well, I think this is possible. I don't anticipate seeing it in the very near future. But the four Entente states in French West Africa, with Houphouet Boigny as their leader, are anxious not only to have the four of them to be in some kind of a loose confederation, but even a looser confederation of eight more, the so-called Brazzaville powers. I think this kind of thing can develop, not very quickly, but I hope over a period of time it could. And I think because so many of these countries are small that this is a very important thing to happen.
Mr. Childs.
Governor Williams, we've just heard this very grave news about the Laos situation, and you've been talking with these neutral and uncommitted leaders in Africa. What do you think their reaction would be if the United States is compelled, despite all efforts to find a peaceful settlement, to intervene in Laos with military force?
Well, I think that the administration has been very careful in building up the position of the United States as one that would be going in only after extreme provocation. And I would be hopeful that they would understand this. I think normally they might not, but I think the situation has been pretty well explained, and I think the position of Prime Minister Nehru of India in supporting this position indicates that other neutral countries may understand our problem.
Well, you used the phrase while you were out there, and it seems to have caused some controversy, Africa for the Africans. Do you think that some of these leaders might react with Asia for the Asians or no?
Well, I don't know, but I'm sure that this wouldn't be out of our policy because certainly our programs for Laos do not contemplate the United States having any territorial ambitions. All we want is that the Laotians have an opportunity to have the government of their own choosing.
Take specifically President Nkrumah of Ghana. He approaches these problems with a great deal of suspicion, does he not? Do you feel that we could count on his understanding this problem that we have in Laos, or no?
Well, President Kennedy, when he met with Nkrumah, seemed to have been able to convince him of our sincerity in the Congo, because when they left, Nkrumah indicated a much greater support for the United Nations than he had in the past, and I would be hopeful that at least we could move in that direction if we didn't go all the way in convincing him.
Governor,
do you happen to know whether in that talk with Nkrumah the president raised the question of Laos at all and gave him some idea of our position?
I do not know.
Well, let me take you now to another question. You mentioned the other day in your speech at the press club that in the first year of the Marshall Plan, we gave more aid to Austria, a relatively small country, than we are going to provide to all of Africa this year. I think the sum is roughly $250 million. You've spoken of the need for more aid. I'm wondering myself whether, as a result of your own trip and the experience we have, after all, picked up in Asia and in Europe with aid programs, what have we learned? How do we go about dispensing aid less wastefully than in the past and getting more appreciable results?
The president in his program and his message on foreign aid indicated that one of the most important things was to have the aid not on an annual basis but on a long-term basis, so that the local governments would be able to have an economic development program over a period of years. I think this kind of planning would do much to make the aid more efficient. I think also it would be most helpful if our procedures could be overhauled so as to lessen the time between the actual commencement of negotiation and the delivery of aid. So many of the foreign countries lose heart, and by the time that the aid is finally delivered, they're almost disappointed rather than encouraged that something is happening.
You've made the point, I think, once, that we ought to go in more for what are called impact projects. I wonder if you could indicate to us what kind of projects in Africa would have this effect of giving a much quicker impression to the people that we are behind them, that we are helping them.
Well, I was dismayed, for example, when I discovered that a local request for a community center had been turned down because it didn't have an economic development aspect. I can't think of anything that should show the local people that we were interested in their welfare than this community center, which they would visit from time.
Thanks for the promotion.
From time to time, and I think things of this kind are important. I don't think this should be the exclusive end of our aid, but I think we have to mix a just proportion of this kind of immediate impact with the so-called infrastructure or economic development programs.
Mr. Lissagore.
Governor Williams, we keep hearing about the need for keeping the Cold War out of Africa. With so many of these countries barely able to govern themselves and with their need for aid so great, is it realistic to expect the communists not to jump in there with both feet in view of the chaos and instability that seems to be built into the situation?
Well, there's no doubt but what the communists would love to jump in with both feet. They indicated that in their earlier conventions this year. Certainly, they're working as hard as they can with the voice of Moscow, the voice of Peking. They're also sending delegations wherever they can be received in the capitals. They're sending technicians. But I think that the African, at least for the moment, for the most part, is so jealous of his independence that he is not knowingly going to give that independence away to anyone. And so I think that the communists, by and large, are playing in a low key. They're trying to win over leaders who will be helpful to them later. They seem to be working on students to a great extent. They seem to be working in the labor movement. Even with Lumumba, when Russians came in with all these troops and planes and everything, they overplayed their hand and got out. So I think they're playing a waiting game, which is nonetheless dangerous, however.
But, Governor, are the leaders, are they aware of any loss of freedom involved in Soviet bloc help or Chinese communist help? Isn't there a great need now for help in some form, and rather quickly by your own account?
I think there is a great need for help as quickly as possible, because so many of these leaders have politically desperate situations where they have to deliver. If they can't get it from the West, to which I think they're culturally attuned, then they're going to have to turn to the East whether they want to or not. And, of course, as you indicate, this may put them under greater dependence than they are accounting for.
Governor, a lot of these countries, as I understand it, are just aggregations of tribes, some of them are at least. Do you ever see the time when any of them, any of these particular, this particular type, will become self-sufficient?
Well, yes, I do. The Congo, for example, if the political situation ameliorates, I think can have the possibility of economic self-sufficiency within a period of time. I would like to go back and comment on this tribal situation, because I don't think people fully realize what a tremendous challenge this is to local leadership, because the tribal customs create obstructions to progress of a very considerable magnitude. So these people have a much greater challenge than any of us can reasonably contemplate.
Well, could I ask you one other question about the Congo, which seems to be kind of fragmented into tribal groups? Do you think that country can ever be united and politically governed by a central authority?
I think it's possible. I think that they're beginning to work out in their own palaver system some way of getting a consensus. Whether they will have a very centralized government when they get through, I don't know. But I think they will have a central organ with some kind of confederation that I think is a viable operation. After all, after our War of Independence, we had a confederation, not a union. And these people, of course, are less politically sophisticated than our forefathers.
Mrs. Tufte.
Mr. Secretary, did the African leaders tell you that our only interest in their country was to prevent the communists taking it over, rather than any interest we might have in them as a people or in helping them develop their countries? And if they said that to you, what did you answer?
None of the government leaders indicated this, but in the newspaper conferences I had, there were questions which indicated this very strongly. I indicated that our very first objective, which has been stated and restated by our president, was to see that Africa become a family of politically stable and politically independent and economically stable countries. And that if we could accomplish this, then I was confident that the Africans, who value their independence so much, wouldn't barter it away to the Soviet Union or to anybody else. And then I pointed this out. I said that independence is a twofold thing. One is national independence, and second is personal independence. And I said that under a system of communism, the individual is subordinated to the state, and as a consequence, there isn't that personal independence. And I said I was sure that as the Africans understood what communism meant, they would value their independence too highly to get caught up in that net.
Well, did they always bring up our own racial problem here to prove their points?
Quite often did bring up our racial problems. I told them the history of improvements over the past years. And the other thing they would bring up would be our votes in the United Nations. Mm-hmm. They would say we have a revolutionary our tradition of independence and freedom, but we seem to have been influenced by our relationships with European nations to deny that. Very fortunately, our votes on Southwest Africa and at the end on Angola indicated the true direction of our policy.
Mr. Childs.
When you were in Nigeria, or about the time you were there, Governor Williams, one of the newspapers there, the Daily Telegraph, writing about the Peace Corps in an editorial, said that they regarded it as a deadly, suspicious device on the part of America to plant their spies all over the world. Did you find that reaction very much with respect to the Peace Corps, and do you think there is a place for the Peace Corps in Africa?
I am confident that this is a very isolated reaction. I was with the Governor General, Mr. Ezekwe, and he was strongly in favor of the Peace Corps and gave out several statements on that. And personally, he indicated that he wanted to get some Peace Corps people to work in the University of Nigeria. As a matter of fact, almost every place I went, people were greatly enthusiastic about the Peace Corps, and one of the things they liked was that the people were going to come in at a salary similar to their own and live under conditions similar to their own, and they felt that this was a step in the right direction.
Now, you think young Americans can go out there and will stick it out for a year and a half or 2 years under those conditions of climate and health and...
It's a real challenge, but we've had a number of them already on Operations Crossroads and other things, so that I think if they're carefully selected, the vast majority, I don't mean the vast majority, but almost 100% will do it. There'll always be some that climatically will not be able to take it, but I think most of them will.
Mr. Abel.
Governor, let me take you to one African country which has been a cause of very considerable concern. I refer to Guinea, the country in which apparently the communists, the Russian communists have, and the East Europeans in general, have the strongest foothold. I have heard from various sources that Guinea is almost broke, that the government of Sekou Touré is having a very hard time carrying on. Do you think it would be a good investment for us to go to Sekou Touré and offer him aid or bail him out in this situation?
Well, when you say go to him, I think that in all probability he may be coming to us, and then the question is, should we help him? I think here this will have to be judged on the individual facts. I don't think we ought to turn our back on him, but I think also we can't underwrite his budgetary deficit. In other words, I think he's not beyond the pale, if that's what you had in mind, but I think that the amount of aid that we give him will have to be in proportion to what we can honestly do there with respect to our commitments to other countries in Africa.
You mentioned more than once, Governor, that you regarded the present scale of aid to Africa as inadequate. Can you give us some idea, even a rough idea, of how much larger it should be in the next year or two?
I actually can't do that. I haven't sat down to figure it out. I just know that what we have been doing is just not enough to do the job. Now, I think that we ought to point out here that the United States is not the only one that's assisting Africa. As a matter of fact, the combined aid of Britain and France is about three times our own. And I think that the United States must work in concert with them and hopefully with some of the other West European nations in order to do the job that has to be done.
Mr. Lissagore.
Governor, did you get many requests from these African countries for military aid?
There were several that did ask for military aid, yes, sir.
Do you think that we ought to get on that treadmill of granting military aid to these underdeveloped countries? This is something we did in Laos. The bulk of our aid to Laos went into military hardware or training of troops or supporting the troops, and you know the situation we're in there now. Would you recommend a similar business in Africa, or would you think it wiser if we just simply stayed away from this military aid aspects of the program?
Well, I agree with the concept that we should reduce military aid as much as we can and as quickly as we can. Now, it's a problem to eliminate it completely, we're working at this from two directions. One, we're trying to limit whatever aid we are giving to defensive and to light weapons, which partially are needed for internal defense. And secondly, the department is making a study of the possibility of some kind of all-African arms limitation. I don't know how it would be brought about, but we are studying that because we see the pitfall that we might run into, rather that Africa might run into.
But to achieve that, you'd have to do it internationally, wouldn't you?
That's correct. This would have to be agreed to by the African nations themselves, plus the great powers who might be supplying weapons.
One other question on the Peace Corps. Governor, do you think that greater use might be made in Africa of skilled American Negroes?
Yes, I think we can step this up to advantage. I saw a number of Negroes there in our various foreign services, and I thought they were doing a good job, and I think that they were quite effective, and I think we could use more.
Did you encounter any feeling among the African countries that we tended to patronize them when we sent them American Negroes in these various capacities?
Well, I've heard of this argument, but I didn't see this in any demonstrated case. I think the thing is that we just can't send them any Negro. We have to send them a qualified Negro as we have to send them a qualified white. And I think that a man of equal qualifications, the Negro perhaps can do a better job. I'd say more than perhaps, probably can.
We have about 1 minute left. Mr. Childs.
Governor, we've heard a lot about quiet diplomacy in this new administration. Now, you gave a great many speeches and press conferences. On sober reflection, do you think that you might have done better with more quiet diplomacy in Africa?
Well, I think that's a good question, but we also believe in a free press. I actually gave about one speech that was reported. The other problem is answering press questions, and I think we have to do that.
Mr. Lissigore.
Governor, did you find any Chinese communist penetration in Africa?
I didn't see any Chinese, but there are Chinese moving in, and we found in Somalia, for example, that they were planning to move in rather than the Soviets.
I think at that point I'll have to interrupt. I'm sorry, but I see that our time is up.
Our thanks to Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, G. Menon Williams, and the members of the panel, Marquis Childs of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Peter Lissigore, Chicago Daily News, Ellie Abel, Detroit News, and Esther Van Wagener-Tufte, NBC News. The guest on Meet the Press next week will be Secretary of Agriculture Orville Freeman. Meet the Press, which is celebrating its 16th anniversary on the air, is produced by Lawrence Spivak. A bookkeeper's record of Red Cross disaster operations last year would read a little like this. A total of 325 disaster relief operations were conducted by Red Cross. Nearly 52,000 homes were destroyed or damaged by disasters, and thousands were rebuilt or repaired with the help of Red Cross aid. Some 108,000 disaster victims across the country were given emergency mass care by Red Cross. 2,100 days, or the equivalent of more than 5 calendar years in time and service, were given by Red Cross nurses in the care of disaster-stricken people. Whenever disaster strikes, Red Cross is on the spot with food, clothing, shelter, medical, and nursing aid. Red Cross is mercy in action. It's your hand reaching out to help when you can't be there yourself. Red Cross needs your support. This year, please be generous. Good things happen when you help Red Cross.